Hi, today's March 13th, 2022, the day before Pi Day. This is Tadao Gasawara. John Westfall is on a super special mission, so my very special guest host is Paul Lawler, who we last heard back in December 26th, 2021. Not that long ago, Paul.
Hello. Yeah, no, not too long.
Yeah. So Paul was looking through our show notes and said, I cannot discern any theme. And I said, you are correct, sir. There is no theme except to note two anniversaries. One, I saw Tim Berners-Lee post that yesterday, I believe, was 33 years since he submitted the proposal for the concept of a World Wide Web. So if you are older than 33 years old, you have lived in a world with no World Wide Web, and that is probably a frightening concept to some people. It's kind of almost amazing to think about, right?
Well, you know, I was reading the show notes, and they actually say that I've lived in a world with no World Wide Web and no concept of a World Wide Web.
No concept of a World Wide Web.
And that's not true. Quite true.
No? You think about hypertext?
Well, so there are several things that were conceptual.
Yeah.
Going back to E.M. Forrester, who wrote a book, a short story in about 1905 called The Machine Stops.
I've heard about it, never read it.
It's an excellent short story. I highly recommend it. But the whole idea of, that kind of communication is not new. I mean, the reality of it is new, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's lots of people who envisioned it as
right.
This is what's going to be the communication mechanism of the future.
Right. And there was hypertext, I think, like 50 years ago. So it was just never implemented. That said, prior to the World Wide Web, we did have other internet components like Usenet for news groups. And, what was that thing where I can't remember the name now. It was kind of like a search engine, and you would just type in stuff, and it'll come to me later. But prior to the World Wide Web, we did have a couple of things that you could use to communicate with other people. There was also email, of course. And it is kind of, I should note that I was fortunate enough to be at one of the four universities that were the first four that were interconnected by the proto-ARPANET. So I think it was, University of Utah, UCLA, UCSB, which is where I was, and I think Stanford was the first four universities that were interconnected. But anyway.
So 33 years ago is what year?
Oh, gosh, you're going to make me do math now?
Yeah.
So 33 years ago would have been 1989.
Okay, because I was at a conference with Tim Berners-Lee in 1995.
No way!
Yeah, well, it was here.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sure. I remember. I wasn't there, but I remember. Was I there? No, I don't think I was there. I think I know which conference you're at, and I was not there. I remember reading about it. So yeah, 1989 doesn't seem that long ago, does it? I mean, to those of us who are gray-haired, at least. But anyway, so 33 years. The other thing I wanted to note is that more trivia to some people than the World Wide Web, but for folks who enjoy music gadgets, those of you know Roland Corporation, it turns 50 years old next month, April 18th. It was founded in April 18th, 1972. And if you go to Roland50.studio, .studio is the domain name, by the way, not .com, Roland50.studio, you will find that you are at a web-based synthesizer. That's more than a synthesizer. It's a web-based, it's a studio. It lets you create music on the web. No need to buy any hardware. Pretty cool. Roland50.studio. Go check it out. It's a synth on the web commemorating the 50th anniversary. I have not played with it much. I just thought it was very cool when I read about it.
I was going to say, did you create something for us here today?
I did not. But it is, which drum machine did they simulate on there? I can't remember now. Let me go look. I do have an old Roland TR-505, And they use an 808, so it's much newer than one, or much older. I think it's the bigger one. I have the 505, so lying around somewhere, actually, back when I thought I, you know, would be fussing more with music as an amateur. Okay, now, on to the big news for last week that I know I'm going to ask John what he thinks about it when we get back together in the next podcast. But Paul, so what did you think about the Apple's event this past week? Anything? First of all, I'm not buying anything because most of the stuff is just too expensive for me.
Well, I was kind of underwhelmed, although I did think that it's nice that they're keeping the idea of the, at least of the Mini going, although it's no longer a Mini.
Well, there still is a Mini, but this thing, the Mac Studio, it is a monster Mini, to say the least. It's 3.7 inches high, which doesn't sound big, but unless you look at a regular Mini, and that it is a chunk. I mean, if you hurl that at somebody, you could do that person damage. Yeah, and it's expensive, right? It's like $4,000 if you know, beef it up with all the specs.
Yeah, Apple is getting really, okay, I don't want to use the word deceptive, but I'm trying to think of a better word for it. In their advertising, it's almost always a bait and switch, right? The price that they show you,
it's and not then they what go, oh, buy.
Yeah, you wanted wheels and you wanted a steering wheel.
Well, it doesn't.
An engine in it.
Yeah, it doesn't start cheap. It starts at 2,000, and then it goes up. You know, this is like that summer day I remember in China many summers ago, and the way I described it to people is a July in summer of 1995. And the way I described it to people is, I went outside. It was 104, and then it got hot. So yeah, it starts expensive, and then it gets really expensive. They say you can get up to 8 terabytes of solid-state storage and 120 gigabytes of memory, which is and a huge number of ports. But that, yeah, that's a, you got to be a serious like videographer or something to, you know, or crypto cracking or, or something like that. But
yeah, and what Apple wants for solid-state storage and memory is insane.
Never been cheap. I mean, even, you know, iPhones and iPads, right? You start off at some tiny little bit, and then you get something that's usable to you, and say, whoa, that's another $200 or whatever. So, yeah, so like you, I'm glad the Mac Mini is still around. Although, as I was telling John, it wasn't announced this time, but there is a, maybe it's a rumor or somebody saw a patent of a Mac and a keyboard, a la the TRS-80 Model 1 or Commodore. And,
so,
you know,
so everything but a monitor.
Everything but a monitor, right. Might even have a trackpad built in. But it's an interesting concept. And if it's not too expensive, you know, say not much more than a Mac Mini, I would seriously consider it. Next thing is also expensive. It goes with, you know, the $2,000 to $4,000 Mac Studio. Is the 27-inch 5K studio display that's $1,600.
Although for a long time, they haven't had a display, so.
Yeah, true. It's 1,600. 600 nits of brightness, 813 Bionic chip that powers the camera and audio features, and a 12-megapixel ultra-wide camera. Remember when our point-and-shoot cameras were like 1 megapixel? The stuff we would go out into nature and try to take nature photographs and sightseeing. Wow. Okay, so it's kind of like a computer in a display. You know, it's sort of the opposite of the computer in the keyboard. A13 is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that is a hefty chip inside of the display. If you really want it, I mean, I guess if you know, if you're one of those serious, you know, videophiles and video bloggers.
Okay, so I know certain people who shall remain nameless.
Not me.
Who were just devastated when Apple stopped making displays because everything to say Apple and have the logo.
We'll just call them enthusiasts, Apple enthusiasts. There are other names for them, but let's just call them Apple enthusiasts.
Fanboy leapt immediately to mind, but
yeah. But $1,600 again. Poor, not gonna buy that. Now, this one's not too expensive in the scheme of things. It's the new Apple iPhone SE with the A15 Bionic and 5G. What are you using as a phone these days? You're using an iPhone, as I recall.
I have a iPhone 13.
Okay.
And I also have a, what is it?
Pixel?
Samsung? No, it's not a Pixel. It's the one that I can attach different things to. It's a Motorola Android phone.
Okay. I didn't know they still made Android phones.
They probably don't. It's a few years old.
Okay.
Okay. It's not my primary phone, so.
Yeah. Well, the new SE starts at $429. So it's a little more expensive than the last one.
I noticed they kept the fingerprint sensor on it.
Yes.
Instead of the face sensor.
Yes. Yes. Just as we start to drop masks and we could have used that fingerprint sensor on our phones, they put it back. Or kept it, I guess.
Although, interestingly, my wife has this phone.
Uh-huh.
She has
the older model.
The older model.
Yeah.
And the fingerprints don't work.
Really?
On any phone. She's never had a phone or an iPad that her fingerprint would reliably work on. So my understanding is that for those of us of a certain age, our fingerprints tend to, I guess the word is degrade over time.
Wear out.
Yeah. And so a lot of older people have trouble with various fingerprint sensors.
That's interesting. You know, I always thought mine were less than reliable, except in the Pixel. The Pixel fingerprint sensor works any time except if the finger is wet, you know, like you wash your hands or something. But the Apple fingerprint sensor has always been tricky for me. But I always assumed, incorrectly, because I had to think about this, is because in the old days when I used to play guitar a lot, I kind of wore away my fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
So my left hand really doesn't have much in the way of fingerprints left. They're just sort of all calloused.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work on my right hand either, which are not calloused. So,
right.
So I realized after using that as an excuse for a while, that's not true. I did find the fact that it supports 5G interesting. You know, you have a 5G because you have the 13, right?
Right.
And how have you found 5G in terms of availability as you wander around and speed and so forth?
So, I mean, the speed is great when I'm in an area that has a reliable 5G connection.
Mm.
Sadly, that area can change dramatically.
Yes.
Moving about 6 feet. Like, step inside a house and
yeah,
nothing. And I have clients who are calling me up and screaming that their phones don't work anymore. And I said, oh, you got a new phone, didn't you? And they go,
yeah.
Yes. And I said, and it's 5G. And
yeah.
So they move around their house. It picks up, it drops, it picks up, it drops.
Yeah. So they really need to get the Wi-Fi and turn Wi-Fi calling on.
I had them turn Wi-Fi calling on.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I have not had a 5G experience until recently. I still don't have a 5G phone. But at work, I recently was able to replace my MiFi, which was awful, 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 awful Verizon MiFi, with another Verizon MiFi, which is less awful. And the new Verizon MiFi I have is a 5G. And I kind of knew I would experience what you described because I watched, not Verizon, but I watched Sprint contractors put up some 5G microcells in downtown Honolulu. And I think they had to put them up every block because the microcells are really tiny. Like you know, implied earlier. And so I did something similar to you, except I was outside all the time. So I started out the top of a block and I walked about two blocks. And I had 6 megabits down to about 100 megabits down. Just in a two walk block. Not, you know, mm-hmm. We're not talking driving to another town. So the variability is ultra high, like you said.
Yeah, to me, the real benefit of 5G is the low latency.
Mm.
Because, and not for what I do now,
mm-hmm.
but I'm assuming someday I will have a spiffy smart car,
mm-hmm.
a la Tesla or something like that, that's mm-hmm. going to want to communicate with other vehicles, communicate with the infrastructure.
Right.
And the low latency is going to make that actually possible.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing I noticed is that Verizon has two flavors of 5G. And the flavor we have in Hawaii is the you know, slow flavor. I can never get anything past, you know, I don't know, 110 megabits down or something like that, which is okay. I mean, you know, I'm not complaining. As you know, as an old person, I remember having a 300 baud modem. So anything more than 300 bits per second is pretty significantly faster for me.
Yeah, it's sad that I remember going to a 1200 baud modem and going, wow, four times the speed. This is phenomenal.
I remember doing that and a 2400 and a 9600 and a 19.2. Remember the 19.2s? Mm-hmm. And then a 56. And I thought, well, that's the end of technology. You can't get any faster.
The other amazing thing to me is, you know, I teach college kids mm-hmm. and who know nothing because they were all born after 9/11. And I tell them, okay, so if you wanted to download a song,
right?
How big is a song?
Ah,
you know, 4 megabytes, 5 megabytes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I go, okay, so imagine if it was going to take you 6 hours to download one song.
So true. So true. And, you know, I remember downloading some early pre-1.0 version of Linux. It was 50 3.5-inch floppy disks of files, right? And it took, I don't know how long it took, a couple of days? It took a while to download. Plus, it was all in BinHex format, so it was not compressed. Well, it was compressed, but it was in text compressed, so... Yeah, that's. I wonder if I still have those 50 floppies somewhere. I bet I do. The early version of Linux.
And then you had to pray the connection didn't drop, or if it did, it would be smart enough to pick up where it left off.
Yes, yes. Yeah, the good old days, you know, UU encode, UU decode, creating the binary files and then slapping them all. It was a lot of work to install Linux in the old days, or anything for that matter. But. Actually, I remember getting Windows Beta. Did I get it on? No. They didn't have Windows Beta. They had CDs by then. So I still remember that. That was also pretty frightening because I think I lost my Ethernet connection after I installed the beta. So, you know, we didn't even have Wi-Fi back then. You know, the last thing, it's not on this. I don't see it in this Mac Rumors article that I was referring to for some of the others. But one of the other things that was announced was a new iPad Air that supports, has 5G as an option. But also I found it interesting because it now supports the Apple Pencil 2, like the Mac, like the Apple Mini 6 does. And that's really interesting because, you know, until now, if you wanted something bigger than an iPad Mini to use with an Apple Pencil, you had to buy a Pro, at least to buy an Apple Pencil 2.
Mm-hmm.
So having a, you know, under $1,000 option to do my little doodling on using Apple Pencil 2 is real nice, especially since I'll be in a fixed income starting next year.
But you have a Pro, don't you?
I have three of them, actually.
Okay, then.
But only one of them supports the Apple Pencil 2. The rest are the old school, original Apple Pencil. Actually, you know, that's funny, though. I have a 2020 iPad Pro 11 that supports the Apple Pencil 2. But it has had a problem. And this is the second one. I actually had a warranty replacement. This one has a green line. It's a software green line. It's not a dead pixels or anything. That sometimes appear about one-third of the way in landscape mode from the left. And sometimes it goes away. Sometimes it's there for months. And I've tried to get Apple to replace it a second time because it was still under warranty until recently. Might still be under warranty, actually. And they won't do it, which is kind of annoying.
That's weird.
I know, right? Because the first one they did fine, and I think I do have two replacements coming to me. But any rate, so I have to think about it. It's, you know, it's not a showstopper, but it is annoying.
Who did you talk to at Apple?
Their customer support.
Okay, because I've found that different Apple stores
mm-hmm.
give you a very different experience in terms of what they're willing to do for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this was during the height of the pandemic. And so all the Apple stores were closed, so I didn't even bother to, you know, try to take it down. And so I called their customer support, and I think I spoke to a very nice person in Australia, and just wouldn't do it. So, yeah. So at any rate, you know, I'm thinking about buying one more Apple iPad Pro, or maybe the new Apple iPad Air with
Apple. Does the line show up? Is it just when you're using it, or does it show up in the finished product? Like if you did a doodle, would it have the line in it?
No. It's a software display line, so it doesn't show up in any stored image. And it disappears sometimes. Sometimes the line is not there. It wasn't there for many, many months after the last big firmware upgrade, I think. And then it just showed up again recently, like a week ago. And I've done soft resets and, all the stuff that they tell you to do. I've done everything except a hard reset, which I am loath to do for obvious reasons. But in any case, we'll figure it out. I'm trying not to get all worked up about it. Anyway, that's pretty much all that was announced last week that I can remember. There are a couple of things I was hoping would be announced, like a new AirPods Pro 2 with some biometrics, but that wasn't announced. The Mac and a keyboard, which John Westfall and I were kind of hoping would be announced, but we didn't think it would be. And I'm trying to think of anything else that would have been interesting for them announced, but I can't think of anything at the moment. Oh, yeah. What was John and I were talking about? We wanted them to add into... what did they call it? Apple One service? Where the bundle where you have Apple Arcades and all of that
news
stuff?
Yeah.
What did we want them to bundle? And we were just talking... Oh, audiobooks! We were telling each other it'd be nice if Apple... Because it's $30-something dollars a month. It's not cheap. We were hoping that the Apple would bundle like Apple audiobooks or something with it. We thought that'd be pretty cool. Like Audible does. In their Audible Plus subscription plan. Are you still subscribing to Audible, by the way,
Paul? I do.
Yeah.
I haven't read an actual book in about 3 years.
Oh, I'm worse than you are. It's been forever since I read an actual book, unless it was a technical book, But anything that's fiction or even nonfiction, but not technical, like historical, biographical, that kind of stuff, I haven't looked at words with my eyeballs in many, many, many years.
Although I haven't succumbed to the temptation to play things fast.
Mm.
I find the chipmunk voices just way too annoying.
There's a podcast app that I use every now and then. Let me go look it up. Overcast. And there is one podcaster whose podcasts are excellent, but he speaks really slow like this. And so I sped it up by 50%. No chipmunk voice. It is awesome. Overcast.
Okay.
I would recommend it. I recommend. Yeah. So, but I agree. And as I get older, I think maybe it's if people speak really fast, it might be too fast for me to comprehend. Yeah, I remember my parents years ago used to tell me like something about young people speak too fast. I go, they're speaking at a normal speed, mom or daddy or whoever. And now I am them.
Well, it reminds me of that line from the movie Amadeus where he says, It's known that you can only hear so many notes in a night.
Anyway, as I said, the new iPad Air with the Apple Pencil 2 support, that's kind of interesting, especially since my iPad Pro 2020 is kind of wonky. And I guess the last thing I want to note, I was going to ask you actually about new things you've been trying out. I had heard about Canva, Canva, which is a design site service app while back, and it's whatever. It looks pretty interesting. I don't know what I would use. I personally would use it for. I'm not a designer or create whatevers. And anybody's looked at my website, Todd, you're not a designer. But anyway, I happened to listen to because I don't read much anymore. Apple News had a audio version of, I think, a Fast Company article called "The Rise of Canva, the $40 billion design juggernaut." I did not realize they were that big. And so I listened to the article about the founders and found it kind of fascinating. And so I was just wondering if you've been using any new stuff like Canva new to me. Any new services or services I might not know of that you've found interesting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I did kind of look at Canva a few years ago,
Oh, you did? Okay.
but like you, well, because I do stuff for students, right?
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah.
like you, I'm not really a design person.
Right.
And there's also an alternative out there to PowerPoint, which is, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's a non like a non-linear version of PowerPoint. You can jump kind of all over the place. Prezi.
Oh,
Are you
you,
familiar with Prezi?
some, yeah, I think John uses that. Let me look it up. Prezi, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I think John Westfall uses that, because he also teaches at, university level like yourself.
It turns out that I'm much more of a linear thinker than I realized. So I have a really hard time with things that bounce all over the place.
Oh boy. I was just trying to think, who's that? Oh golly. Who's my English profs would kill me. Who was the Nobel Prize winner for literature, American, that used to write non-linear? Oh golly. I can't think of it. I'm looking it
Bob
up right
Dylan.
now. Huh?
Bob Dylan.
Well, book literature, book literature. Although he also is a Nobel Prize winner. Here, let's go look. I'll just go look. What the heck? It's just a podcast. Who cares? Blah 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 blah. Shaw, no. Sinclair Lewis, no. It'll come to me. It'll come to me. Scrolling, 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 scrolling. William Faulkner, right? His novels were said to be non-linear, so he would have loved it. There you go. Faulkner's app, Prezi, Prezi. Yeah, I should go back and look at this. I'm gonna just put that in our show notes so I remember. Well, let me might not remember why I put it there, but I'll look at it and go, why did I put it there? Yeah, so Prezi. Interesting. I should try this sometime. I will give it a whirl.
Yeah, it's worth trying.
Yeah, like Canva too. I don't know what I would use it for, but it's anything that's successful is like, must be something there, even if not for me. But I'll go take a look at that. Yeah, I was just trying to think of stuff I've been using lately that would be of interest. I was that mentioned to you or John or somebody, and I really haven't. It's been kind of a slow service time. There's maybe because there's so much else going on in the world that not paying as much attention to these things as I once used to. But in any case, Paul, thanks for
You would have thought
yeah.
that with 2 years of downtime
Nothing.
for the world,
Yeah.
that they would have taken that opportunity to really develop some spiffy new stuff. And yet it doesn't seem to have happened. In fact, they didn't even take the opportunity to fix the roads when nobody was driving.
And not just roads, but parking lots and parking lot gates and things. I just went to see my optometrist the other day. I only see him once a year, right? And the gate to the parking lot, which is a paid parking lot, was still broken, as it was a year before when I went to see him for my last checkup. And the pavement was still, full of potholes. And oh, something new did happen. One of the auto attendant payment kiosks died in that 1 year. It was never repaired. So yeah, you're right. It's we did not do a good job of maintaining what we already had. We just kind of let things go to potholes, I guess.
Although I have noticed the rise of the auto attendant parking kiosk
Yes.
in a lot of places that I go, that the nice old man who used to collect the
Yeah.
money is gone, and there's all kinds of spiffy new high-tech
Giant
equipment
kiosk.
where it like photographs your license plate,
Yeah.
and then when you go out, if you checked out at the inside kiosk, it sees your license plate and just lifts the gate automatically. And
Yeah.
but I mean, it's all great when it works. I'm wondering what happens when it goes wrong because there's no body there to yell at.
Right. And what happens when the power goes out and things reset?
So I got stuck at one of these at the Hilton.
Hmm.
And it, what happened is I put my ticket in.
Yeah.
The gate went up.
Right.
Somebody in a wheelchair went wheeling past me on the right, went through the gate in
and
their
a
wheelchair
sensor.
And caused the gate to close.
Wow.
So I couldn't get out.
Wow.
And so I figured, okay, there's a button on here I can push to talk to a human being.
Yes.
There was no button. There was a phone number.
Right.
If I had my cell phone, so I was okay. If I hadn't had a cell phone,
right,
I would have been toast because I couldn't call the phone number.
And were there people in back of you trying to get out and getting really angry
at
you?
Oh, yes.
Turkey?
Fortunately, fortunately, there are two exits there, so they could just move to the
back
other
up.
One. But
yeah. And when you called that phone number, did you get an actual human or did you get an auto attendant?
I did get an actual human who very nicely let me out.
Oh, that's good. You know, speaking of people in wheelchairs that, you know, caused that little sensor glitch for you, I've seen that happen. Not that particular action, but I've also noticed that meters, you know, actual parking meters have disappeared or are disappearing to be replaced by centralized kiosks. And, you know, it occurred to me to people with mobility limitations, you don't have to be in a wheelchair, you know, you could have a sprained ankle. Now you got to walk like, you know, a quarter mile to these darn kiosks that may or may not be working. And,
and a quarter mile back to put a little ticket on your windshield.
Right. You know, so it's I guess it solves something, but it creates new problems. And especially the ones that don't let you use credit cards or, you know, they don't let you, they limit the amount you can, you know, you can't park all day or, you know, 4 hours. So if you're going to be somewhere for a morning meeting for 4 hours, you got to go back out once to pay because it won't let you pay all in advance.
All the University of Hawaii ones are like that now because students would park all day, right?
Right, right, right.
So now you're limited to a certain amount of time, and the price is outrageous. But I guess it's more cost effective to, and it's probably a bigger moneymaker for them to go around and give people tickets than it is to deny people entrance.
Yeah. So that's the advance we saw during the pandemic, Paul, right? Because you know that took a while to figure out. The advance we saw was how to make life more annoying for many, many people. They fixed a problem that was not a problem.
Although I have to say there are fewer things more annoying than being told every time I pull into a McDonald's, which I have a young grandson, so I pull into McDonald's frequently. And every time I pull in, they tell me, are you aware that we have this wonderful new app for you?
I have not been to a McDonald's in ages, and I finally broke down and I said, okay, I'm just going to, I haven't had a Big Mac in like 3 years, you know? So I said, I am going to break down. I'm going to buy myself a Big Mac today. And so I did that and I got that. I said, what the heck is, you know, am I getting advertisement? Which it is.
It is. And it's a canned voice because when the person actually comes on to take your order, it's a different voice.
Right. Right. Well, you know, the McDonald's in Aina Haina, which I think was the very first McDonald's in Hawaii, maybe. But anyway, I remember years ago reading that before all of this advertisement stuff, that they had actually, when you spoke to somebody, to make an order, today it's the person you speak to is the person you eventually see at the window, I guess. But this was 5-6 years ago. You were actually talking to somebody in California who's taking the order. And, you know, shipping it back to, you know, email, you know, mm-hmm. whatever they were using, some kind of automated system, not email, of course, but, you know, and then the orders would show up locally. So, you know, you weren't even talking to somebody in Hawaii when you're at one of their windows.
There's a very funny parody video about that where the guy pulls into a Burger King and the person answering the little kiosk is in India.
Call center in India. Yeah.
So the guy pulls in and he says, "Oh, welcome to Gateway. May I take your order?"
Yeah.
They said, "Oh, I'm sorry, wrong script."
Wrong script. Ah, boy. Yeah. So, yeah, why didn't things get fixed during the pandemic? I don't know. See, well, now we can go into an old person's rant. So what did you notice during the pandemic? You know, I think we've talked a little bit, you know, during the pandemic, but, you know, aside from people baking more bread, I'm not exactly sure how humanity has progressed in the last 2 years, except a lot of people are good at breaking bread now, I guess. I did not, by the way.
I'm wondering if the big bump that companies like Zoom got is going to last, or if it's going to tank when people go back to, well, are people going to go back? I've seen a lot of offices that are still allowing a fairly large number of people to work from home.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak for everyone else. I do know that just what I see downtown, even though things are more normalized now, right? I mean, you know, restaurants are back open at full, I think, full capacity, or pretty darn near it, and all of that. There isn't much foot traffic. When I went, I walked downtown for lunch on Thursday last week, actually Tuesday and Thursday, and there was not a lot of foot traffic downtown like there used to be pre-pandemic, you know. So I think you're right. I know that for myself, for the teams that I manage, I've told them that unless higher people than me, and you know who they are, if the people above, unless people above me say something, I'm not planning to bring back or ask people to come back more than twice a week forever.
Wow. Okay, so do you find people to be as productive?
More
productive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that they're personally, I think they're more productive than they were, and they're happier, you know, which may be correlated, if you know what I mean. And also, it's like, you know, something happens at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, oh, golly, everybody's in commute. You know, I can't reach anybody to help fix this thing because somebody's around, you know, even if they're not around their house, then they've got, you know, an activation on their phone that lets them know that they've got a notification. And so it's, and in the old days, people might get a little testy if you call somebody after, you know, 4:30 or something. But these days, I don't find that to be an issue. Like, hey, we got a problem. Sorry, it's 5:30. Can you help?
Well, you know, that's interesting because a few years ago, I read an article about social media. And basically, it was an article promoting the idea of allowing your employees to use social media at work. Because what it said was, if you deny them the ability to use social media at work, they're going to take a lot of breaks. They're going to go for a smoke break, even if they don't smoke. They're going to go hang out at the water cooler. They're going to go get coffee. They're going to go do this. They're going to go do that. If you let them use social media, they're at their desk. Even at lunchtime, they're at their desk. So it said in the long run, people are actually more reachable if you allow them to do some of these other things.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But yeah, and I know my wife, I think they called, for some reason, directors and above back, not anybody else, one day a week starting 2 weeks ago, I think. And starting in April, I think it'll be 2 days a week. I don't know if they ever plan to go back to 5 days a week, but I kind of don't think so. And from what I've been reading, a lot of companies are like that, you know, kind of a hybrid, not kind of, a hybrid telework schedule where you're in part at a time and you're out the rest.
Which I'm sure the commercial real estate people are not going to be happy about.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's going to be a very different world going forward, I think. Don't know if it'll ever change back. It could, you know, who knows, right? It could. But I just don't see it. It's, for years, the argument was, the argument against telework, whether part-time or full-time, was, well, you know, I can't see you, I can't manage you, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, you need to have that in-person collaborative, which I do kind of believe in, but I just don't believe it. You need it 5 days a week. And what we learned in the last 2 years is, hey, telework works for not everything. There's some things that you just got to be on-prem. You know, I would not want to have a telework plumber, for example. you know, or a carpenter. I don't think that would work at all, personally. But for a lot of other professions, it works just fine. I would also prefer my dentist to be in the same room I'm in when, you know,
when I'm getting my teeth. Having said that, we actually almost have telework carpenters and plumbers, because if I need to know how to do something,
YouTube.
I watch a YouTube video, and this guy on the other side of the world tells me how to do it.
You know, it's funny because, I mean, I'm not sure I would do plumbing that way, but for a lot of little things, like my wife's key fob had a dead battery during the pandemic. And, you know, normally she would just pop by wherever and get it changed out, right? Wait a manufacturer. And I said, let me go look on YouTube. Oh, here, pull this out from your key fob, jigger this, and boom, it's open.
Okay, there's also a downside to that, which is when you go searching for the video for how to open your key fob, and you find this 12-minute video, the first 10 minutes of which are this guy promoting his other YouTube channels, and the last minute and 30 seconds are when he shows you how to open the key fob.
Yeah, and that's why it's so good. You can scrub through YouTube videos like, oh, there he is. He's showing me something now. But so true, so true. Hey, did you, speaking of, you know, making things better, what did you do during the pandemic? Did you take up any new hobbies or develop new skills or fix something?
I had a lot of good intentions.
I hear you.
And I mean, I did do a lot of work around the house. I fixed up my yard. I did some handy kind of stuff, but I had a lot of plans to start major projects that didn't really work.
Well, don't feel bad, Paul. I'm sure all of us are in the same ship on the ocean. Let's see, what did I do? I bought 2 Raspberry Pis, of which I've turned each one on twice.
That was one of my projects. In fact, thanks to you, or perhaps no thanks to you, I bought that little Raspberry Pi in a suitcase with all the experiments.
The Crow Pi, yes.
Yes, the Crow Pi. And so I was all excited to you know, get that going, and it's still sitting in the suitcase.
Same. I also bought the Raspberry Pi 400, which is the supercharged Raspberry Pi processor inside of a keyboard, which, you know, again, as my first personally purchased computer was a TRS Model 80, which is a computer and a keyboard. And so I have very fond memories of that, you know, concept. And so I got really excited, and oh well. And in fact, I bought a nice, what is this? I think an 8-inch LCD display for my Raspberry Pi 400, but it's attached to my MacBook and has a second screen right now. So so that didn't work out at all. But I also bought 2 guitars, I think, maybe 3.
Wow.
Yeah, what? You know. Seemed like a good idea at the time.
And?
I dust them. Well, they're in a case, so they really don't need dusting.
They don't even need
dusting. I thought I had it. I knew that. I was like, yeah, you buy a case at the same time. You know, that'll save on the dusting. I'm not even sure they're in tune, but no plug for Microsoft's in tune. But yeah, in fact, I'm looking around. One is not in its case. The case is sitting in a closet somewhere, and it's sitting on a stand taunting me and says, aren't you going to do something with me?
Right.
Yeah, I thought about that. Yeah, so there are a bunch of stuff like that never really happened. But that's okay. You know what? The main thing is we're still alive.
So now you've got your Roland studio. You can
put
that together with your guitar. And
yeah. Yeah, it is pretty, and it's free, and it's on a web, and you don't have to plug it in. I mean, you know, you do have to plug in your computer, but it's, I wonder if it works on iPad. I haven't tested it on iPad. I will do that later. Anyway, Paul, thank you so much for your time. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure.
Paul Lawler was our special guest host this week, and while John is on his super secret mission, and we will talk to you next time.